30 a.m. on August the 10th, 2022, and I'm calling the meeting to order. Just go back here so we know who else all is on the call. Present here in the boardroom is myself, Dr. Campbell, our executive director, Heather Boss, Seamus Monahan, AAC. I heard Dr. Lana and Dr. Foreman. And I heard Dr. Popakoff. We have attorney Mr. William Sados is with Dr. Newman. We have also present, Dr. Flynn is present with us, as well as Mr. Moskow for Dr. Bainbright's case. Is there anyone we missed? All right. All accounted for, good deal. Okay, so we'll move on to, does anybody have any declaration of any conflict of interest on any of the cases on this agenda, any items on the agenda? I'm hearing some heavy breathing backlash or something.
I did.
Okay, just to remind everybody, when you're not speaking, to keep, you know, you can mute your phone, so, okay, great. And as always, remembering this is a professional meeting and we conduct it as such. We're going to move now, we're going to move on to number five, which is our items for board review, discussion, and possible action, subsection A, which is investigation files. We're going to discuss the number three complaint, which is 22-02-C, is on Dr. Seth Clark. At this time, there's more, we continue this in the investigation phase because there was more materials that needed to, and more investigation needed to occur. So this complaint will be continued at a future meeting.
Yes.
So I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to continue case 22-02-C for Dr. Seth Clark to keep it. We are going to continue in the investigation status and reschedule the meeting at a future date.
Second.
Any discussion on the motion? All in favor, signify aye.
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 Opposed, so moved. All right, our next case we're going to move on here to is number one. The complaint number is 20-18-C. This is Dr. Daniel Bainbright. And as I indicated, we have Mr. Ken Moskow is present as Dr. Bainbright's attorney. I need to indicate here that this case is tabled previously because of litigation that is going on. And at the time that we had, we stayed the complaint because of litigation, we had voted to move this to an informal hearing, informal interview. So at this point, I think we have seen this case and we've had lots of information that has been presented at previous meetings from Dr. Bainbright. And Dr. Bainbright is not going to be present physically at this meeting, I believe, available by telephone if needed. So it is my opinion, and I'll ask my fellow board members the same for their opinion as to, I think we're at the point where we can move forward in the investigation status, but we need to then, I'm going to make a motion to rescind the motion that we had made on taking this to an informal hearing, a formal interview. Do you have a second?
Second.
Okay, so discussion, what are your opinions? Do you feel like there's enough information that we don't need to proceed to? No, we can't.
No, we can't, so just go on.
Yeah, so we have to vote on the motion. So is there any discussion, questions on that motion?
Could you repeat the motion?
The motion? Yes, the motion is to rescind, I'm making a motion to rescind the previous motion that we had to move this case to an informal interview.
Okay.
Okay? Any other questions or concerns?
Yolanda, any questions about?
Okay, Dr. Yolanda?
No, okay,
so let's go ahead and vote on the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. All right. So we have, like I said, we have Mr. Moscow present and Dr. Polakoff is the investigator. So I'm just going to ask Dr. Polakoff to go ahead and make a summary of her report, her investigation report, and then we don't have a complainant here on the call either. And we have. We have heard from the complainant in the past, so I will ask now for Dr. Polakoff's review.
Good morning, Board. This is Dr. Polakoff. I'm going to do a brief review of 2018C for the allegations and my justification for why I substantiated the allegations. Allegations, the first one was performing surgery without documented standard of care and question the necessity of the surgery performed. The patient SW presented for a traumatized fifth toenail, which she bumped while at a Walmart, and she said that happenstance, she mentioned that whenever she has a pedicure, the pedicurist puts these little cotton puffs in between her toes. But she said she never had toe pain, one foot looked like the other, and she never had problems. But during that visit, it was mentioned to her that she had hammer toe and digital deformities of 2, 3, 4, and 5. Surgery was performed of a tenotomy and a capsulotomy on each digit, destroying the biomechanical integrity of the digit and the forefoot. I substantiated the allegation. The second allegation, which was made with multiple injections of sequela concerns, this was also substantiated. Concerns over the numerous number of steroid injections of 1/2 cc Ketalog Femalogram and 1/2 cc Dexamethasone injections into each of the interspaces. The second interspace received 6 injections over a period of a year. The third interspace was 12 injections from January 19 to May of 20. The fourth interspace received 5 injections between August 19th and August of 19 and February of 20. The allegation number 3 is poor documentation, inaccurate documentation concerns. This is also substantiated. There was no documentation of concerns here. The documentation, an example is on January 17th of 19. It was documented that the patient had a chronic ulcer of the foot. The patient was 13 days post-op and had fractured blisters on toes 2, 3, 4 of the surgical foot. This is not a chronic ulcer. On the January 31st, 19 visit, the doctor made a statement that does not make sense when you review it. First, a sentence of pain, draining wound from the patient. Then the next sentence, the patient has no pain and healed. The patient continues to report severe pain requiring multiple return visits for injections of anesthesia. And my concern is how can a diagnosis be made of second interspace ligament strain? How is it possible to differentiate this new diagnosis from the neuronal pain that was mentioned in the earlier visit, which is all 27 days post-op? The last allegation was hearing concerns. In hearing concerns, as I noted, 13 days post-op, it was billed for 97957 that was not combined with the post-op 90 days mobile fee, but was separate for a chronic wound for the blisters, which is part of the surgical fee. Again, on July 25th of 19, It is billed for 2,600 times 2, which is also 13. But it is only an injection. Nothing is aspirated, as is required in the arthrocentesis. The notes describe an injection only. And on 5-28-20, it was billed for 20550 pre-injections, but it was only listed getting 2 injections. Now, I do believe when the doctor presented this to the board, he did say that this was a mistake. The allegations were made were substantiated by review of the literature provided. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Polakoff. I do not have any additional questions. Dr. Foreman or Dr. Alano, do you have any other questions for Dr. Polakoff?
No, I think we asked him the first time. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank
you. No questions for Dr. Alano. Thank you. Dr. Polakoff.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. All right, so, like I said, this will make a remarks or two that, of course, you all, from reading the materials now, that this case was settled, and it's something to note that in the past, in 2017, there was a letter of concern regarding injections and use of steroids at that time that was given in indicating that patients should definitely, you know, should be educated upon the risks and benefits, side effects of steroid injections, just so that you remember that that has happened in the past. So since Mr. Moskow is here and Dr. Bangard is not, I'll just ask for a...
And Dr. Campbell, I did want to note that when discussing the past letter of concern, that should be only relevant during the disciplinary. So if you find a violation or you decide to, you know, order something non-disciplinary or anything like that, at the time that you're going to order what the actual discipline is, that's when you can discuss.
That's it. Okay. So, and I apologize for my error. Thank you. Okay, so,
obviously we were in receipt of Dr. Polakoff's investigative report, and in response to that, as you all recall, Dr. Bangard provided what wound up to be what I'm looking at now, a 45-page sort of, you know, point-to-point response, and I know you all have had that and have reviewed it, recap in the entirety. I do want to just reiterate, Dr. Polakoff talks about when she assessed what happened with regard to Dr. Bangard's diagnosis of SW with regard to her hammertoes, Dr. Polakoff seems to rely solely not on the documentation of her complaints of pain and pain. I think the term in the documentation is painful hammertoes that SW complained of. Instead, Dr. Polakoff seems to ignore that entirely and rely solely on SW's version of events. But as we did, as pointed out when we were here before at a hearing where SW was present, she lacks credibility. And I want to be clear. I've met SW. I took her deposition in the underlying person. She has massive credibility problems. And I'm not suggesting for a minute that she's deliberately lying or misleading anybody. I want to be clear about that. But as the board is well aware, she completely misled the board on what Dr. Jared Lieber's second opinion was. He, in fact, wrote a letter to the board explaining very clearly what he told her, and it was the exact opposite of what SW said. Moreover, during the course of litigation, this is a tricky situation for me because obviously the board, by law, is entitled to all of SW's podiatry records, and this board, you know, oversees podiatrists, and the board possesses all of her records with the Vanguard, and I believe Dr. Lieber. But I believe that, you know, we can't just willy-nilly send you SW's medical records that we obtained in the underlying litigation. But she had neurological issues going back many years, causing her underlying issues with her legs and feet, which she never reported to Dr. Bangard. And perhaps more on point to what I'm saying in terms of her credibility, she had tremendous memory issues. So again, I don't suggest that SW, who is a lovely woman, she has credibility issues because she has neurological problems that that created a lot of memory issues for her. And she neglected to report her pre-existing neurological issues. So, you know, the idea that Dr. Polakoff has seemingly relied solely on SW, even to the expense of the documentation, the medical records on what she reported with regard to her painful hammer toes, I don't think that's particularly equitable.
But then she didn't know about that. If she doesn't have the information, that's all she knows.
Oh, no, she had pre-existing. She saw a neurologist years before she saw Dr. Banker.
I know, but that wasn't given to us, so how would that happen?
But the board did have Dr. Lieber's second opinion, which completely contradicted SW's report of what he told her. If you'll recall, she reported, Dr. Lieber told me this procedure was totally not indicated. I never had hammer toes, and Dr. Banner could not have possibly diagnosed me with this without an MRI. And Dr. Lieber's letter to the board, and it's pretty brief, says the exact opposite. It says he never told her that she never had hammer toes, and he never told her that her issue couldn't be diagnosed without an MRI, and in fact, it could be diagnosed without an MRI. So I understand that the board certainly isn't privy to her neurological records, but I think that goes further to her credibility issues. But I don't think you have to look beyond her misrepresentation of her experience with Dr. Lieber to find that she's not a particularly credible witness. And the reason I raise that is because the investigative report relies solely on SW's report of her recollection of what happened with Dr. Bangar going back years. Additionally,
and you always know in cases that we always have the he said, she said, and then there's what really happened. So.
But it's funny, in when it comes to lawsuits and you have experts who have to derive opinions, what do they derive their opinions from? The medical records. And so, and then when they start saying, well, I don't believe this happened, or I think that, it's like, well, what are you basing it on? Because all you have to look at is what you have in front of you, and I agree, that's what the board is. The board has those things in front of it. The board has the documentation, which documents SW's complaints when she saw Dr. Lieber early on of painful hammer toes. So that's part of the record, and it's also part of the record that SW clearly misrepresented her experience with Dr. Lieber. And again, I can't emphasize this enough. I'm not saying she did it deliberately. She did misrepresent it, her faulty memory, because Dr. Lieber is going off his medical records and his documentation. And then the only other thing I would add, I heard, it's hard to hear clearly over the phone, that's nobody's fault, but I did hear Dr. Polakoff mention blisters, the ulcers on the bottom of Ms. Wilkins' feet. I mean, in the underlying litigation, obviously the board doesn't have this. We had three experts in the case. We had a podiatrist on standard care and a neurologist on causation and a orthopedic surgeon on causation. And the orthopedic surgeon opined that the ulcers were more likely than not an allergic reaction to the bandages and not caused by anything Dr. Bender did not do. But other than that, I don't want to go tit for tat with everything in Dr. Polakoff's report, because Dr. Bangar did that to an exhausting extent in a 45-page response, and you all have that in front of you, and I trust that we'll give a fair shake to both Dr. Polakoff's report and Dr. Bangar's response to it. As far as the billing issues go, I do know that I don't know Dr. Bangar. Address that in his response, but I believe one of the billing issues had to do with an appointment where Dr. Bangar billed for things that went beyond normal post-op care, including seeing her in his office over a weekend, and that may have been one of the issues. But look, he responded pretty adequately to everything, so I don't want to reiterate what he wrote. 45-page response to the investigative report. So unless there's other questions that you think I'm capable and competent of answering, you know, I'll leave it there. And of course, I'll reiterate that, you know, Dr. Banger had a surgery planned this morning, and he's got a pretty tight schedule, and obviously this case has been before the board for quite some time. It got tabled due to litigation, so we didn't want to push it back further. He should be available after 10 o'clock this morning if the board wants to ask him any particular questions. But other than that, I'll leave it with y'all.
Dr. Foreman, Dr. Yolanda, what was reviewing again the case? Would you have any additional questions for Dr. Banker?
The only question I would have would be billing questions. Why is he billed for a trigger point injection when we gave an aroma injection? That would be the only question I have, because that, it didn't make sense to me, because there are separate codes.
Right. Well, that was, you know, part of, I think, you know, after hearing, you know, of course we want private information, obviously, from the litigation, but the discussion here about credible witness, the patient being a non-credible witness, is, yes, definitely part of it, I'm of the opinion that this is not anything egregious, but I just, you know, I think it requires, I'd like to see some non-disciplinary CMEs, going back to coding, going back to documentation, the updates on what's current thought with use of multiple injections, also patient selection and preoperative evaluation. That's where I would like to see some additional CMEs.
I agree with Dr. Kemp. I don't think anything would agree with those before here. But more consumer education would be appropriate.
Okay. Well, then I will go ahead and make that motion to offer an order, issue an order for non-disciplinary CME in the categories of coding and billing, documentation, updates on the use of steroid injections, and treatment of pediatric complaints, and surgery patient selection and preoperative evaluation. I would request 2 hours of each, and this is above and beyond the 25 hours of CME required for a licensure yearly. Those are board pre-approved by the board and need to be completed within 6 months of signing of the order.
Second.
Yeah, I have a second. Hold on, guys. After the second, we'll vote. I need to repeat to Seamus here. Coding and billing, documentation, updates on the use of steroid injections in podiatric practice, and surgical patient selection / preoperative evaluation. They're including preoperative evaluation. So we're all set on the motion, so any other discussion? All right, so we'll take a vote signifying aye if you're agreement. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody.
Next case is 21-10-C, which is Dr. Zachary Flynn. Dr. Flynn is present at the meeting here, and we do not have a complainant or counsel. So Dr. Farahani is the investigator on this case, and Dr. Farahani is not present. He had a family emergency, so he is not with us. I'm sure, we've heard this case prior, and Dr. Farahani gave us a very complete investigation here, as you know. If you would look at his conclusions pretty much give us a very good synopsis of everything. So, hang on a second. I'm trying to get here to the... And that would be, let's see here, on page... Last page of his report is on, from our file, and it's page 304. So I think that gives us a very good review, total review of the situation. So, like I said, since Dr. Farahani is not here, you can't ask him any questions. So Dr. Flynn is here, so I'm going to ask Dr. Flynn at this time to give us a summary of his recollection and care. And before he starts to remember that we do not have a consent form, we do not have an operative report, and we do not have readable x-rays. The only x-ray that is in our file there that is readable and shows exactly the surgery that the doctor did is from Dr. Jensen is her last name, and she's Bellagio foot and ankle. There are some very good x-rays. As it shows the lapidus, and it shows the Taylor's bunionectomy, and looks like there was, and Dr. Flynn will have to confer on this, that there was an arthroplasty. Maybe it was done in that second toe, along with, of course, you're not going to see the plantar plate repair on the x-ray, but so that's what he did. Also, the patient had questioned and said about the vascular issues that she developed, and on those x-rays, I did not see any indication of any vascular problems. There was no Mockenberg sclerosis of any vessels. And Dr. Flynn, as well as Dr. Abraham and other physicians, were able to palpate pedal pulses. So those are just some other items that I just wanted to highlight again, just because we don't have Dr. Farahani here. And hang on a second. That x-ray that the Dr. Jensen and the material she provided is on page 455 of our packet. So if you want to look at those again, that's where they are. So now we'll hear from Dr. Flynn.
Good morning, everybody. Can everyone hear me okay?
Can you guys hear Dr. Flynn?
Good here. Good morning, everybody. I take the time to talk to you guys. I'm just going to kind of give you my recollection of events. The main reason that I came is I've been in communication with Heather. I know you guys are missing the informed consent and the operative report, and so I wanted to take the time to come down to kind of explain that situation, because it's a result of my former employer. So when I performed this case back in June of 2019, the case was performed at Phoenix St. Luke's Hospital while I was employed by the Steward Health Orthopedic and Sports Medicine Center. As you are all aware, Phoenix St. Luke's is no longer an open facility. In the subsequent year of my employment with them, we actually changed our EMR system twice. God blessed me with a very good memory, and so I can recall a lot of the details on this patient specifically. So I performed her surgery in June of 19. She presented to me for a second opinion for a plantar plate rupture and second digit hammer toe with long-standing moderate bunion formation and bunion pain. And she also complained of Taylor's bunion pain. She had exhausted conservative management well over the last year and continued to have pain and dysfunction. So I had discussed surgical intervention with her with the lapidus stabilizing first rate bunionectomy, hammer toe correction, plantar plate repair, with synthetic brace, and then a Taylor's bunionectomy as well. So I completed that surgery in Phoenix, St. Louis, June of 19. In the immediate postoperative window, she had a difficult postoperative recovery with swelling and pain. Had to give her multiple refills of narcotic pain medication, anti-inflammatories. I believe I also prescribed a med drug dose pack. This was all within the first 3 weeks after the surgery. During that time, she kind of lost faith in my care and what I was doing to manage her swelling and pain. She went to the emergency room on multiple occasions. On one such event, she had sustained epidermal necrosis to the incisional site on the lapidus and was concerned for infection, even though she had already completed 10 days of oral antibiotics per my postoperative protocol. At my last evaluation with her, there was no signs of infection that I recall or documented. After that visit at the emergency room, she followed up in the wound care center at Banner University Hospital for a period of weeks and then was referred to Dr. Abraham for further care. Essentially, during that time, I did not reevaluate the patient for an extended period. No physical therapy was performed, and she was immobilized and walking in a pneumatic walking boot. During that time, Dr. Abraham evaluated her. She was referred to Modern Vascular, where she had questionable arterial disease. I think multiple angiograms were performed, as well as venous assessments. During my physical exams and everything, we had palpable pulses, as Dr. Abraham confirmed with me. But I'm assuming since she was having incisional healing issues, the referral was made. After Dr. Abraham performed her evaluation, she subsequently saw Dr. Harland. She was, all during this time, she had difficulty ambulating and persistent pain. I believe from persistent pain to the plantar plate and the stiffness of the second toe due to the repair. I believe my last evaluation with her was some point in September of that year. She came back to me briefly. I was very displeased with the care that I had provided. I offered multiple different other treatment options to try to get her back on the right path, primarily physical therapy, and she elected to no longer follow up with me. I lost track of her at that point, and after I received the complaint, obviously I've been involved trying to do my part and obtain anything that Ms. Brodus requests to get back to you guys in a timely fashion to help resolve this matter. I wanted to take the time to essentially relay to you guys that my former employer, as obviously you guys sent multiple records requests and have been unable to obtain them, I wanted to provide some clarity on that situation for you because I don't know the status on how we're going to go about getting those records. So when I first met patient MS, it was at the Highland Clinic location at 22nd Street in Highland. They had an isolated PACS unit there, so her first set of x-rays would be there. Her subsequent last follow-up visit with me was actually in my Peoria office at the time. That was at 75th Avenue in Deer Valley. That office was closed in December of 20, I believe, or 21. That also had an isolated PACS unit. And I don't know what Stuart has done with those records. I ran into this issue, and the reason I know this is because I had to pull data out for my board certification, and it was it took me about 2.5 months to compile that data and track down the x-rays that I needed with this same situation. Obviously, a lot of time has passed since then, so I don't know their current situation. All my contacts at my former site of employment are no longer with the corporation, and so I have no means to assist in this matter. Additionally, the hospital where the case was performed is obviously no longer open and functioning. Tempe St. Luke's Hospital would be the next closest facility where the transitional records should have been placed, but the only thing that I would caution in that regard is during that time, I believe the hospital was on Cerner EMR, and prior to my termination of employment with Stuart and our relationship, they had recently switched to Meditech in the hospital, and so tracking down those, the scanned in informed consent that would have been performed at the hospital prior to the surgery, as well as the operative report, would be in the Cerner EMR. And so the only thing that I believe there was some advanced imaging completed at some point by another physician, and so that would be for reference at Simon Med. And so I just wanted to come down and kind of explain the student situation to hopefully help get this matter resolved. With my termination of employment with Stewart, I obviously had a non-compete, non-solicitation with them. And then leading up to that, Ms. Woodfrider obviously had terminated her care with me. And so trying to be helpful and assistant in resolving this, but it's Stewart's making it very difficult.
Thank you very much for the explanation. I have a couple questions, though, for you. Now, I know it shows on, well, for my board meeting, in our packet, there's, on page 315, there's the affidavit for the custodian of records, and then on page 316, Dr. Flynn presents a letter describing pretty much what, you know, in a shorter, or more summarized about his difficulties in gaining any kind of records from them. One of the things that when you leave a practice, you're supposed to be able to tell the patient who goes with the, you know, where the records are going to be. So was there, did you have any letter or communication to your patients when you left that practice as to where they could get their records?
So during my separation from Stewart, I was under consultation with a lawyer. Essentially, my contract was reaching expiration with Stewart. We were in renegotiations, and negotiations broke down. They were not going to renew my contract, and so they elected to basically separate from me with a 60-day notice, and they sent me home that day. And so they never notified my patients. They never sent them a letter, nor under legal guidance was I allowed to contact them directly with basically any type of contact information for fear of litigation from my former employer.
Say that affected your ability.
Uh, 100%, yeah. On the day that my employment ended, I had actually just completed three surgeries in the hospital. I finished my surgical day at 3:50 p.m., and I had the meeting at 4, and I was no longer employed by Stewart as of 4:30 p.m. local time with patients in the hospital and in recovery.
How does this protect? It does not protect the public. Okay. That's a medical question. So any time during your care of that patient, did you have any, was there any evidence of, you know, chronic regional pain syndrome? Did you have was there any reason that you would have a high index of suspicion of this?
No. So during the immediate postoperative window, all the pain and symptomatology that she was experiencing was directly related to normal postoperative recovery from an aggressive forefoot surgery. And so immediately after that procedure, she was tolerating normal pain regimens, anti-inflammatories. She did have significant edema and bruising that was resolving. But during my immediate postoperative window, there was no immediate concerns for CRPS.
And again, too, I know that you heard me mention the fact that when I looked at those x-rays from Dr. Jensen, that there was no evidence of any kind of vascular disease there. You had palpable pulses. I think the capillary refill was, what, less than 3 or less 3 to 5. But so no other evidence of, you know, I didn't see any documentation about hair growth. I mean, I don't remember right now, but hair growth and anything else that would have indicated any kind of vascular disease.
No clinical evidence of vascular disease.
And we all know in that age group of females, women don't always present with other vascular problems like we would always expect. So it's not unusual that something like this could pop up. When they got it, was found. You know, so that's how I look at it, is that, you know, at least she got to help. And it appears that conservative care is helping this person. So, and then there was in your response, you indicated she missed some appointments. Were those with you? Those are appointments with you that she missed?
Those were with me. So during her recovery, so I normally in a postoperative protocol from that, when the surgery is booked, she'll have a 10 to 12 day postoperative visit with me, which she kept. Due to her concerns, I saw her the following week. Shortly after that, I believe it was like the 1st of August, she went to Banning University for the, she was concerned for infection. She had a post-op visit with me that week and a following one later in August that she did not attend nor cancel.
And you indicated too that there was treatment she was not amenable to, and what was that that she didn't want to do?
During the immediate post-operative window, I recommended starting physical therapy. So typically at the first visit, I will remove stitches, and with a Lapidus and a planner plate, I will refer the patient out to PT for edema management and gait training, and then she did not feel comfortable starting PT due to her pain levels.
And one final question. Do you perform, when you do your surveys out, do you ever perform a written consent in your office as a method of having something there? And I mean, we never expect to have issues like this where you can't get records, so that you would have something in your office?
I do, yeah. So in my office, now that I'm in private practice and have complete control of the situation, in the office, the patients are consented with a 6-page packet with well-laid-out surgical diagrams, risk factors, et cetera. I did perform those at my former employer for a period of time, and then they actually informed me I had to stop doing that because it was against company policy.
No, sometimes I think I've heard it all, but there you go. Sorry about that. Yeah, I have no further questions. Dr. Ilana or Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions, gentlemen?
I don't have any questions.
No, I have no questions.
Thanks. Okay. Wonderful. Well, again, I'll just reiterate Dr. Farahani that he unsubstantiated any claims. Of course, we all discussed the fact that we didn't have the records that were necessary. And I'm just going to make a statement that, you know, this, what the corporate level did here to Dr. Flynn was it puts him at risk for a violation of one of our statutes. But that doesn't seem to have hold any water with them. So, this is just, you know, the fact that he was prevented from telling his patients where he was going. So that could be, somebody could say, well, he abandoned them. So there's just a million and one things there that are just not right, and it has of no fault of Dr. Flint. So I'm going to make a motion to dismiss case 21-10-C as there's no violation of the state statute.
Okay.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. I'm very glad you do that packet, Dr. Flynn.
Yeah.
That will prevent, it will help you in so many ways. And the other thing, too, is just a point of information that if there was ever a time when you were not going to practice and you were selling or doing something, you have to be informing your patients where those records are, who's going to have those records. Appreciate you coming down. All right. Okey-dokey. Next item, we have our minutes. Does anybody have any issues or questions? Oh, I'm so sorry, guys. I apologize. We have Dr. Newman and his counsel on the phone. I apologize, gentlemen. Mr. Powers is present. Dr. Newman has, we have him under, C, renewal applications for licensure and dispensing. Dr. Newman's application is complete. He did all his 25, you know, hours of CME. Everything was on there, but he did list two pending malpractice complaints, and so I will move at this time to accept doctor's renewal application for licensure and dispensing as the application is complete. Fees have been paid. Do I have a second? Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Hello?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Opposed? So moved.
Okay, so because we did receive these the evidence that there have been malpractice cases, we will open. I will make two motions to open board complaints. As that is our procedure. Oh. Okay, so I can combine it in a motion. Okay. I just got some new instruction from Chance here. Okay, so I will make a motion to open board two board complaints for Dr. Neiman. Cases numbers are CV 2022-0033923 and case ZVT019-090502, and that these two complaints, board complaints, will be stayed until litigation is complete.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Any discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. All righty. Now, do we need to ask them for okay, so that takes care of that. So let's go back to minutes, and that is number four. I did not find any issues with our general session minutes of July 13th, 2022. Does anyone have any that they found or questions or concerns about those motions or about the minutes?
No.
All right. Hearing none, let's take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Who seconded the motion, Mark?
Foreman.
Foreman. Thanks, there, Dr. Foreman. Okay. Next, let's move on to paying, which is our licensure here. We have five applications. Our first is Gabriel Cathcart. He is still, he just completed his residency at the VA. Everything is in complete here. Fees are paid, et cetera, et cetera. Does anybody have any questions or concerns?
No.
Okay, hearing none, I'll make a motion to accept the initial application for licensure from Dr. Cathcart and issue the license upon payment of the issuance fee.
Okay.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Next is Dr. George Dewey, who is applying via universal recognition. Everything in here is also complete. Does anyone have any questions or concerns? All right. Then I will make a motion to accept Dr. Dewey's application through universal recognition. And to issue the license upon payment of the issuance fee.
Okay.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. The next is Joseph Fanara. Dr. Fanara is applying via comedy. Everything, I didn't see any issues with his application, and he's paid his fees. So anybody have a question or concern? So hearing none, I will make a motion to accept Dr. Fanara's application via comedy and to issue the license upon payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. Our next is Dr. Ricardo Navarrete. This is an application for a regular licensure. Fees paid. He does not have a DEA yet, so that will need to be sent in later. Does anybody have any questions on this applicant? Hearing that, I will make a motion to accept Dr. Novoret's initial license application, along with the drugs and devices, to accept and issue the said license and registration upon payment of the issuance fee, and that the doctor will send in his DEA certificate when available.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. And our final license application is Rosha Ordi. Dr. Ordi has paid her fees. She's completed her residency. And I believe then she will be getting, she still will need to get her DEA number after getting her license number. So I will go ahead, and if anybody has any concerns. Okay, hearing none, I will make a motion to accept Dr. Ordi. I'm so sorry to mispronounce her name. Accept her application for initial licensure, and to issue that upon the payment of the issuance fee, and then for the doctor will be sending in her DEA when available.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. All righty. Seven and six. Heather's executive director's report. Yay.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, board members. Update on the renewals. To date, the board has renewed 423 renewals. I expect we will still have a few late renewals come in during the month of August, and all of them have to be renewed by August 31st. I do have an additional update. Since I sent out board materials, I previously had told the board that we would be migrating to a newer website platform, and that is going to go live on August 16th. So our website will look different on August 16th, just so you're aware. I can answer any questions on those items. I do not have a current budget. I'm presuming the reason is because all of the boards are working on getting their FY24 budgets in. The deadline for that is September 1st, so CSB has been very busy helping those boards. So I will definitely have one for you in September. Regarding the complaint log, I received two new complaints yesterday afternoon, and those will be added to the complaint log. Otherwise, I can answer any questions.
Oh. Not Toby.
You wanted at the next board meeting.
Alrighty, so summary of current events. Okay, then we have our call to the public, and there is no public out there to call. Anybody have discussion and possible action items for future agendas? Does anybody have anything that they'd like to put on the agenda for? Okay, our next meeting is scheduled for September the 14th, 2022. Heather informed me that Dr. Lyle was going to take a trip and won't be here in October. So Heather has booked some different dates, so we need to see which ones will work for us in October.
Okay.
Madam Chair, board members, I've booked four different dates in October, as Dr. Urbano is going to be unavailable, I believe, from the 10th through the 22nd. So I booked a room for October 5th, which is Wednesday, Thursday, October 6th, Tuesday, October 25th, and Thursday, October 27th.
I can't do it, that's Yom Kippur.
That's what I told her. I said I have to wait to make sure Dr. Foreman, because I didn't know if he, for the High Holy Days, for the 5th and 6th, right?
That's what David told me.
Okay. So is there any conflict with either Tuesday, the October 25th, or Thursday, October 27th?
I can do the 25th. I believe the 27th, I will have a board meeting.
And Dr. Yolanda, Dr. Foreman, if you don't have your schedules right in front of you, if you want to get back to me on whether or not October 25th, it would be...
I can do the 25th.
Okay.
I'm available.
On the 25th?
I'll be able to. Yeah, correct.
Okay, so we will hold our October 2022 meeting on the 25th, and we will be, it's going to be in Boardroom B. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody.
Does anyone have any other items that was discussed or any points? All of our items on the agenda have been addressed. I will make a motion to adjourn at 9:25 a.m.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved.
Hey, did you guys see that Dr. Raven is retiring?
Yeah.
I was like, wow.